Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, December 9, 2015. South Sudan lawmakers are discussing how to remove illegal weapons from the hands of civilians.
Mr. Speaker and honorable members, if there is any country that needs this law, it is the Republic of South Sudan. So it is important that this bill is expedited so as to help rescue the situation.
And Carter Center reports a decrease in guinea worm cases in South Sudan.
Last year we launched the community-based disease surveillance. Even at the community level, at the household level, we train our members, community, who will be working from door to door to educate the people, because we realize there is a gap.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese lawmakers are working around the clock to pass a firearm control bill, which will get firearms off the street and reduce the widespread gun-related violence across the country. The lawmakers in the National Legislative Assembly today send the bill onto its third reading, paving way for its final approval. The bill will regulate the purchase and use of firearms by citizens. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
The Firearms Control Bill 2015 is hereby passed by the House to the third reading. Thank you very much.
That is Mark Nyipoch, the Deputy Speaker in South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly, who chaired today's parliamentary session. Duar Deng chairs the Assembly's Defense, Security and Public Order Committee and presented the bill to lawmakers for its second reading today.
The purpose of this bill is to create administrative structures for control of estates and licensing and control of private use of firearms so as to promote peace and security.
Deng says the Firearms Control Bill, if passed into law, will only apply to private citizens. He says the Army's use of firearms is regulated by the Espele Act and the National Security Service personnel are guided by the National Security Service Bill. Under the Firearms Control Bill, firearms would have to be registered. The proposed bill would also require anyone who wants to possess a firearm to apply to the Interior Ministry and obtain a license. The bill would penalize anyone found in possession of a firearm without a valid license, permit, or authorization. If convicted, violators would face up to 10 years in prison or a fine of up to 25,000 South Sudanese pounds or both. In addition, the bill stipulates that any person who tampers with the markings on a firearm commits an offense punishable by up to 5 years in prison and a fine not exceeding 15,000 South Sudanese pounds. Under the bill, people will not be allowed to carry firearms into public places. The bill was welcomed by lawmakers from both the ruling SPLM and opposition political parties who say its enactment into law is long overdue. Onyoti Adigo is the leader of the minority in South Sudan's parliament.
I think this is a very important bill to us because there are so many problems now prevailing in our country because of lack of laws. That is why now everybody has got a gun, which is really getting insecurity in the country as a whole.
Adigo said it was unfortunate that ministers involved with the security were not present at today's discussion. Alfred Wenmadit, a ruling party lawmaker from Northern Bahr El Ghazal State, says he supports the bill.
Mr. Speaker and honorable members, if there is any country that needs this law, it is the Republic of South Sudan. So it is important that this bill is expedited so as to help rescue the situation.
South Sudan's Bureau for Community Security and Small Arms estimates that at least 3 million illegal firearms are being held by South Sudanese civilians. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Odo in Juba.
Education officials are discussing how to strengthen vocational training programs in South Sudan in order to enable young people gain skills needed to access jobs. Officials from the Ministry of Education, the UN Education Agency, UNESCO, and other non-governmental organizations are conducting a two-day consultative workshop to discuss policies and ways to implement vocational training in the country. For VOA News, Mungume Debs Rakarin files this report from Juba.
Salah Khalid, the head of UNESCO in South Sudan, says the government can tap into its youthful population to get the labor force it needs to help develop the nation. More than 70% of South Sudanese are under 35 years old, according to the United Nations. Khalid says only when South Sudan provides its youth with technical skills will the country develop and prosper.
Employment opportunities for the youth do exist in South Sudan. Skills will give the youth a sense of empowerment and take pride in building their own nation by themselves. And we have to help them.
Unfortunately, Khalid says, only about 10 of South Sudan's 80 vocational and training schools are operational, due in large part to the ongoing crisis. He says UNESCO will work with the government to ensure that vocational training institutes are operational. Paul Makweng, South Sudan's Deputy Education Minister, says he hopes this meeting will result in ideas on how to engage young people and help them become productive.
One thing we are doing actually is setting up a curriculum like what we are doing now, and that curriculum can identify the kind of skills that can be impacted on the youth. And mainly it is regarding the manual skills, the skills that you put on your hand to make a shear. You have a nail, you have a wood, you bring it together or you make a table and sell your table.
Makweng says his ministry will work with NGOs to ensure that vocational centers are set up both in and out of Juba. He says equipping young people with skills will also ensure that the country experiences relative peace, as young people will be able to earn money. More than 84% of South Sudan population live in rural areas. And according to a 2014 Africa Development Bank report, more than half of the population lives below the poverty line. The World Bank defines living below the poverty line as having to live on less than $1.9 per day. Major Mayor Machar, Deputy Chairperson of National Disarmament, Demobilization and Reintegration Commission, commonly known as DDR, says this workshop is timely. He says if there are no programs that cater to the youth,
they can become criminals, thugs, they can disturb people, become cause insecurity. They use their military skills to do anything they want to do. They can disturb relative peace in the country.
The United Nations says nearly 500,000 South Sudanese children and youth have been forced to abandon school due to the conflict. Khalid suggests that the government forms a task force to come up with a government policy that will ensure the country's youth return to school and acquire the skills they need to contribute to the country's development.
The ministries in South Sudan, they have to talk to each other. They have to work with each other.
Khalid says without this kind of coordinated approach between the government's ministries, it will be difficult to get the country back on track toward economic development. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
The number of guinea worm cases in South Sudan is going down. Only 5 cases of guinea worm were registered by health officials this year, compared to more than 70 cases last year. The Carter Center, which runs a guinea worm eradication program in South Sudan, says it has made significant progress towards eradicating the disease. But as Philip Thornaleu reports for VOA from Juba, there is a long way to go before South Sudan is declared free of guinea worm cases.
The Carter Center, the charity founded by former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, the South Sudan Health Ministry, and other organizations are holding a 2-day conference beginning today here in Juba to review efforts to eradicate guinea worm in the country. Daniel Madit is the Carter Center Guinea Worm Eradication Program Coordinator for Lagos State's Awaria County, where one case of the disease was confirmed this year. Madit says his team conducts community awareness program on the importance of keeping sources of drinking water clean.
What we do tell to the community is to filter the water, not to drink the water directly from the pond. They have to use a closed filter to filter the water, and then they have to drink a clean water so that they can be safe from getting guinea worm disease.
Madit says local communities are encouraged to drink water from boreholes, which he admits are scarce in South Sudan.
There are no boreholes. The tool that we use to to keep the water clean is a closed filter and five filter for cattle keepers. Actually, some people, they don't use a closed filter correctly. When they send small children to collect the water, they misplace the filter so that the filter will fall into the water. Then the insects are also entered. So when you drink that water, then you will still be contaminated because it's not being filtered correctly.
Madid says the shortage of borehole in Awerial County communities explains why new cases of guinea worm continue to be reported in that part of Lagos State. Eastern Equatoria, Werap, and Western Barrow-Gazala states are the other parts of the country where cases of the disease have been reported in the recent past, despite enormous efforts by the Carter Center to eradicate the disease. Officials say 58 of last year's 70 reported guinea worm cases were in Eastern Equatoria State. This year, only 5 cases of the disease have been reported, with one in Eastern Equatoria State. Margaret Eto is Eastern Equatoria State's health minister.
We took it as a responsibility of everyone in the state to talk about it. So the community awareness is the most important, which we took it as really our priority. Last year we launched the community-based disease surveillance. That is to make sure that even at the community level, at the household level, we train our members, community, who will be working from door to door to educate the people, because we realize there is a gap.
Ito says training 2,500 home health promoters and digging more boreholes in the state has been critical toward reducing the number of new guinea worm cases. She says now the focus is on eliminating the disease in 2016.
Actually, I'm looking at zero. Even this case of this year is a surprise because we really want to talk about zero in 2015. However, I think to me one is like almost talking about zero. We have really done our best, and really I say congratulations to Eastern Equatoria State.
Eto acknowledges that some communities have no access to clean drinking water, a major hindrance toward efforts to eradicate guinea worm. Human beings contract guinea worm when they drink water contaminated with guinea worm labor. McCoy Samuel Yivi, director for the Carter Center's South Sudan Guinea Worm Eradication Program, says he is encouraged by what has been achieved so far, but says much more must be done.
In fact, as reported, we have barely around 41% of endemic villages having access to safe water. And even these villages that have access to safe water, sometimes there is frequent breakdown in the boreholes.
Crane Wezas, acting vice president of health programs for the Carter Center, says those efforts should continue.
And we must be aware of one obstacle which is a threat to the program: complacency. Success breeds complacency. Complacency breeds failure.
In 2006, the year the Carter Center launched its guinea worm eradication program in South Sudan, it documented more than 20,000 cases of the disease in the country. The country has come a long way since then. But health officials say they will not be satisfied until the country is declared guinea worm free. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a known gunman kills a 40-year-old rhino in South Sudan. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what were you like as a child?
Well, as a child, I was so peaceful anyway. Not everybody's believe that it's peaceful anyway, but for me, I was so peaceful. I like things to do with acting.
As a stubborn girl, I was very stubborn, very annoying and picky.
As a child, I was very naughty. You know, I don't know whether you know something, being naughty. I wanted everything to be done for me. Even the small thing that I would really do as a child, I just looked at my mother to do it for me.
I was a child that everyone liked, you know, a happy child, liked to play around, making people happy, making people laugh also.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Police and wildlife officials in western Bahr al-Ghazal state say they are searching for the gunman who killed a 40-year-old hippo near Jur River on Tuesday. Villagers have condemned the killing of the hippo. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Wau.
Mabior Urung Orach, director of wildlife in Wau, says unknown gunmen have killed two hippos in the area in the past 2 years. Residents and wildlife officials in western Bahr al-Ghazal state say this latest hippo killed was believed to be the oldest hippo in Jur River. Urach says suspected poachers shot the hippo 3 times, leaving it injured before it eventually died yesterday.
Grinti darabu masafa bayit, baytalata talaga.
The hippo was shot from a far distance with 3 bullets. So as its practice, whenever a hippo is shot, it follows the flow of water and dies in a far distance. So the hippo came and died near us here. And when my forces went, they found it dead with 3 bullets in the body.
But residents are not so sure poachers killed the hippo. Last year, farmers in the Jur River area complained that hippos were destroying their farms and had threatened to kill them. A local resident in Agok village near Jur River, who spoke on condition of anonymity, says she heard gunshot at the river bank. She says shortly afterwards, she heard a hippo roaring in unusual manner. Uraj says officials will make sure the suspected poachers are brought to justice. He says if found guilty, the poachers can be jailed for up to 7 years for killing a hippo. Local fisherman Matthew Miskin decried the hippo's killing. He says hippos dig big holes on the riverbed, providing a breeding ground for fish.
For killing such an animal like that, like a hippo, I think it is not good because they are very important to us, especially in the river. They are the very animal which are keeping fish for us in the river, because they dig the sand, they make a very big hole in the river. So when the fish comes, so it get this big hole, so it has to stay there. And then we go there and then we will have our hooks or our net, and then we catch our fish.
6 months ago, a hippopotamus harmed a fisherman with its sharp teeth. Urach says despite such incidences, residents should try to protect rather than kill wildlife like hippos.
These animals are not for wildlife alone. It is for all of us. So let us protect them. Whether you are a policeman or a soldier, don't kill these animals. Tell those who want to kill these animals not to do so. These are our resources. And when people, especially tourists, come later and see these animals, they will pay something in return.
Urach says hippos in the area normally travel to the river banks in the evening hours. He warns villagers against coming too close to wild fish. Wildlife officials estimated there are more than 10 hippos in this area, which is part of Southern National Park that extends up to Western Equatoria State. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
World Health Organization has deployed an emergency response team to Ethiopia, which is facing its worst drought in decades. It warns food insecurity could worsen multiple epidemics and put millions at risk. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The World Health Organization says Ethiopia is facing its worst drought in 30 years. But the humanitarian group Save the Children goes even further, calling it the worst in 50 years. Ethiopia has had 2 poor growing seasons this year due to delayed rains. Dr. Michelle Geyer is the WHO's Director of Emergency Risk Management and Humanitarian Response.
The crisis in Ethiopia has been triggered by El Nino. This weather phenomenon basically triggered drought in large parts of Ethiopia and flooding in other parts. As a result of this, there's been a huge amount of food insecurity in the country and malnutrition and displacement of populations as a result.
That makes people more vulnerable to communicable or infectious diseases.
Malnutrition, for example, in children increases the fact that someone will catch a disease and get pneumonia or diarrhea or malaria. But it also increases the severity of the disease, which means that children, if not seen very quickly, will die very quickly.
The WHO estimates that 400,000 children in Ethiopia will face severe malnutrition in 2016. Another 1 million children and about 700,000 pregnant or breastfeeding women are expected to face moderate malnutrition. Dr. Geyer says there are several disease outbreaks now underway in the country.
These include measles, watery diarrhea because of issues related to poor water and sanitation. There's already meningitis going on. There are cases of dengue fever, and there are almost 250,000 cases of scabies.
The WHO's emergency response team is lending its support to Ethiopia's Ministry of Health.
We have deployed to try and support the Ministry of Health to scale up operations in the country so that we can, with the ministry as well as partners in health, make sure that we can actually deliver health services, so primary health care and hospital care, for all these children that need medical care when they become very severely malnourished and develop these diseases.
The WHO ranks emergencies on a scale of 1 to 3, with 3 being the highest. Syria and Iraq are grade 3. Ethiopia is currently a grade 2. The WHO says the 1982 to 84 food crisis in Ethiopia was the most severe ever recorded and was attributed to the effects of El Nino and war. During that time, famine struck Ethiopia. Hundreds of thousands died, but millions suffered. Much has been done since then to avoid a repeat of that tragedy, including early warning systems and a better understanding of climate change and weather patterns. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has reportedly said he could extend his December deadline for Nigeria's military to defeat Boko Haram. The military says progress has been made, but the group is still carrying out hit-and-run attacks in Nigeria and neighboring countries. VOA's Chris Stein reports from Lagos.
Defense spokesman Rabe Abubakar says the military has cleared Boko Haram militants out of territory they once held and degraded their capabilities. But he said troops cannot prevent attacks on bus stations and marketplaces.
Suicide bombing and other attack on soft targets is something which no military can overnight wipe out.
The Borno state capital, Maiduguri, has been hard hit by the group's six-year quest to impose strict Islamic law in Nigeria's north. Eight people were killed late last month when a suicide bomber attacked a crowd of displaced people that were traveling into the city. But resident Aliyu Biu says the city has overall become safer.
You see, presently, we sleep with our eyes closed. We move along the highway, no blockades. We no longer experience people going into houses to slaughter people. We don't experience gunshots right, left, and center.
But two soldiers deployed about 50 kilometers away from Maiduguri told VOA the insurgents still control three local government areas of Borno State. The soldiers said they lack ammunition and adequate weaponry to fight the militants. Nigeria's military has long been dogged by complaints that its soldiers are ill-equipped to defeat the insurgency. Last month, authorities charged the National Security Advisor under former President Goodluck Jonathan with money laundering. Buhari has accused the former security advisor of stealing billions of dollars meant to equip the country's soldiers. Boko Haram is not a threat to Nigeria alone. Cameroon and Niger continue to report attacks in border areas, and at least 27 people died last week in suicide bombings in Chad, targeting a market on an island in Lake Chad. Coordinating regional efforts remains a challenge. Troops from Niger, Chad, and Cameroon launched operations against Boko Haram in early 2015. However, they are supposed to be transformed into an internationally backed regional force with Nigeria and joined by troops from Benin. That force is still not operational. Senior research fellow at the South Africa-based Institute for Security Studies, David Zunmeno, says deployment has been hobbled by the plunging price of crude, which is vital to both Chad and Nigeria's economies, as well as distrust between the region's leaders. But he warns failing to deploy the force would only aid the insurgency.
It will be a big blow and up opportunities to Boko Haram and other radical groups that African leaders are not very serious about challenging them.
Boko Haram has forced 2.1 million people out of their homes. Many fear to go home because of continued insecurity and loss of homes and jobs in retaken territory in the northeast. Boko Haram violence killed over 6,000 people last year, according to the Global Terrorism Index, and by all accounts, the group has killed several thousand more in 2015. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. South Sudanese lawmakers from both the ruling SPLM party and the opposition say they're working to quickly pass a firearms control bill, which they hope will get firearms off the street and reduce rampant gun-related violence across the country. The lawmakers in South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly today sent the firearms control bill on to its third reading, paving the way for its final approval. The bill would regulate the purchase and use of firearms by citizens. Duar Deng chairs the Assembly's Defense, Security and Public Order Committee and presented the bill to lawmakers for its second reading today. He says the purpose of the bill is to create administrative structures for control of licensing and control of private use of firearms so as to promote peace and security. Deng says the firearms control bill, if passed into law, will only apply to private citizens. He says the Army's use of firearms is regulated by the SPLA Act, and National Security Service personnel are guided by the National Security Service Bill. Under the proposed bill, firearms must be registered. It would also require anyone who wants to possess a firearm to apply to the Interior Ministry and obtain a license. The bill would punish anyone found in possession of a firearm without a valid license. If convicted, violators would face up to 10 years in prison, a fine of up to 25,000 South Sudanese pounds, or both. Education officials say they're holding a two-day workshop to expand vocational training programs to give young South Sudanese the skills they need to find jobs. This week's workshop is sponsored by the Education Ministry, the UN Education Agency, UNESCO, and other organizations. Salah Khalid, the head of UNESCO in South Sudan, says the government can tap into its youthful population to get the labor force it needs to help develop the nation. More than 70% of South Sudanese are under the age of 35, according to the UN. Khalid says only when South Sudan provides its youth with technical skills will the country develop and prosper. Unfortunately, Khalid says only about 10 out of South Sudan's 80 vocational and training schools are operational, due in large part to the crisis. Finally, the number of guinea worm cases in South Sudan is going down. Only 5 cases of guinea worm were registered by health officials in 2015, compared to more than 70 cases last year. The Carter Center, which runs a guinea worm eradication program in South Sudan, says it's made significant progress toward eradicating the disease. The Carter Center, the charity founded by the former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, the South Sudan Health Ministry, and other groups are holding the 2-day conference to review efforts to eradicate guinea worm. Danielle Madit is the Carter Center coordinator for Lake State's Ariel County, where one case of the disease was confirmed this year. Madit says his team conducts community awareness programs on the importance of keeping sources of drinking water clean, like filtering the water. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Panda a Book by Joel Nyal. That's, we've been listening to Joel Nyal with the song Panda Book. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.